Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, and thank you for joining me on the English program. I'm Linda Bordoni, and here's a taste of what we'll be talking about today. Pope Benedict XVI, in Brazil for his sixth pastoral voyage abroad, focuses on the needs and on the hopes of young people. The Brazilian ambassador to Rome speaks of his nation and of how Pope Benedict's visit will leave a mark. And we hear of how a new damming project in the Amazon is threatening the very survival of remote Indian tribes in the area. It's Pope Benedict XVI's first full day in Brazil, and his busy agenda concludes during the evening with a meeting with young people in São Paulo's municipal stadium. The Pope arrived in the city of São Paulo on Wednesday evening and is scheduled to fly back to the Vatican on Monday, May the 14th. This is Pope Benedict's sixth apostolic voyage abroad, and many are the highlights to be expected. Apart from visiting São Paulo, one of the most populous metropolitan areas in the world, the Pope's agenda includes a meeting with young people, the canonization of the first Brazilian-born saint, a visit to the Fazenda de Esperança drug rehabilitation community in the city of Aparecida, a meeting with the Brazilian bishops, and finally, the opening of the Fifth General Conference of Bishops of Latin America and the Caribbean. But of course, this visit will shine the spotlight on different aspects of life in Brazil, a nation that is home to nearly half the world's 1.1 billion Catholics, a nation that welcomed his predecessor, Pope John Paul II, four times during his pontificate. But right now, as I mentioned at the beginning, preparations are intense at São Paulo's municipal stadium, where hundreds of thousands of young people are expected to converge to celebrate their Pope, Benedict XVI. The celebration, which will take the form of a liturgy of the word, focuses on how young people are disciples and missionaries of Jesus Christ. Present together with the young people will be the Archbishop of São Paulo and the bishop responsible in charity for the young people. And of course, Vatican Radio's Emma McCarthy, who's in Brazil travelling with the Pope, will also be there. I asked her if expectations are high.
Expectations are very high, Linda, here in São Paulo today. The Pope himself said yesterday on his arrival that this meeting with the youth of Brazil is one of the priorities of his pastoral journey. Now, the meeting will take place in a stadium which is known as the Pacaembu Stadium. It's a football stadium, the city's football stadium. We all know that in Brazil, football is almost like another religion for their hundreds of thousands of youth. This is another important factor, Linda, the fact that in Brazil, most of the population, a whopping 84% of the population, is actually under 35. This, of course, is one of the fundamental reasons why the Pope has emphasized very much this meeting with the youth this evening. The gates have already opened. Youth are pouring into the stadium. There's expected that 30,000 will be inside the stadium itself, with over 40,000 outside in the surrounding areas. This just gives you an example of, you know, how much the youth of Brazil, and indeed of other countries from Latin America who have made their way to São Paulo for this appointment, they really care about meeting Pope Benedict.
Emma, do you have any idea as to how the choreography will evolve? What will be going on?
Yes, well, it's said that this will be a two-hour event. Basically, it's going to be a celebration of the Liturgy of the Word, which very much concentrates on young people. It will be opened by the Archbishop of São Paulo, who was recently elected at the bishop's meeting here this week in Brazil, who's Odilo Scherer. He will welcome the Pope. Immediately afterwards, five young people who have been chosen from the various regions of this vast nation, from the Amazon, from the south, from the bread plains in the south, they will come up and meet the Pope, and they will speak directly to the Pope, and they're going to represent really the main concerns of the Brazilian youth. They will speak to the Pope about youth and their role in the church, the growth of the these ecclesial movements and lay communities which focus on the youth, involving them more in the church and the daily life of the church. They will also speak to the Pope about youth and education, which is a major problem here in Brazil. The problem being their lack of access to education because of the overwhelming poverty which afflicts so many of the cities and, of course, the rural areas around Brazil. They will also speak to the Pope about youth unemployment. They will describe to him the lack of political motivation and progress regarding trying to create jobs for the youth. There is overwhelming unemployment in Brazil. I think it's something like more than 50% of the population live on less than $1 a day in many of the rural areas around Brazil, particularly in the Amazon basin. So we're speaking about the north of the country. They will also speak about another problem, which is one of the greatest scourges of Brazilian society, particularly for young people, which is the scourge of drugs, violence relating to drugs, and prisons, because Brazil's prisons are packed with many young people ranging in ages from as young as 12 to 20. And of course, these will be the main problems that they will present to the Pope, but they'll also speak to him about youth and charity, their work and their mobilization to become more involved in charity organizations and bringing solidarity to the people, their involvement in healthcare, their involvement in education, their involvement also in ecology and environmental protection. Now, Linda, this has been very much the focus of the Brazilian bishops work with young people across the nation. In the lead up to this meeting with the youth, launched an initiative which they described as fundamental in trying to involve young people within the life of the church and within Brazilian society in general. And they called it Growing Forest Solidarity Action, which has really, it's a campaign they launched at the beginning of Lent. And what they are doing is they are trying to involve youth at a grassroots level and becoming more aware of how their input into their local community has a great effect on the sustainable development of their local community, trying to encourage young people, particularly in the Brazilian countrysides and the rural areas, not to leave their communities but to stay there to try and help develop their communities, try to develop work, employment, and above all, try and protect their local communities.
Thank you, Ema. We'll be speaking to you later on, as you will, of course, be there with the young and the Pope in Brazil. Thank you very much. And earlier in the day, Pope Benedict had a private meeting with Brazil's president, Luiz Inácio Lula Silva, the man we all know as Lula. The venue of that meeting was the Palazzo dos Bandeirantes, the residence of the governor of the state of São Paulo. During that meeting, the two men took time to voice their concerns and to listen to each other. They exchanged gifts and introduced their collaborators. Of course, we will continue to bring you full coverage of the Pope's pastoral visit to Brazil in all of our programmes. Brazil sounds like such an interesting place, and it's so vast and so diverse. I've never been there myself, although I'd love to visit. So I decided to get some background information from one of the most obvious people in Rome, the Brazilian ambassador to Italy. His offices in Palazzo Pamphili overlook the beautiful Piazza Navona, and he was so kind to find time to meet me during his busy schedule and to fill me in on some of the issues the papal journey is highlighting. First of all, I asked him to introduce himself, as I did not trust myself to get the pronunciation of his name correct.
Well, my name is Ademar Barraja. I am the Brazilian ambassador to Italy.
The Pope has spoken often since the beginning of his pontificate of what he calls the growing influence of hedonist secularism, the changing of society, which is less and less involved in spiritual values. And he especially, the bishops actually, especially singled this out as a problem in Brazil, especially as it concerned the youth. Would you agree that it is a Brazilian problem?
Well, I would be very frank. I'm speaking, you know, on a personal note here. I'm not speaking by the government. But let me tell you, first of all, that I am from Catholic breed. And I was educated in a Catholic school in Brazil. So all my background is a Roman Catholic. But I have to recognize that there will be some change in the perception of the young people in general about the church in Brazil, about the behavior of society in face of some rules and regulations of the church. And our new generation is a generation, in particular in the big cities in Brazil, is a generation more open to new ideas, open to new opportunities. And I believe that one of the reasons why you may have some people not only changing from the Roman Catholic Church to other churches, but simply not going to the church anymore, it's because these young people are not finding in the church the appropriate reply to their inquisitions, their own doubts, and their own perspective. So this is a problem, I believe, that nowadays in Brazil, the church, the Roman Catholic Church, is trying to cope with.
Yes, that is in fact the number one issue the Latin American bishops have highlighted. They believe that the church stands at a turning point after losing ground in recent decades, with statistics showing that in Brazil, the number of Catholics is declining steadily, with many lost to Protestant sects. But the ambassador also put his finger on a peculiarity of Brazilian faith and culture, a reality, he says, that is difficult for the rest of the world to understand.
Another thing that you have to recognize, that is a fact of life, is that we in Brazil, we are not entirely Roman Catholic. You know, we have a lot of influence historically from African religion, from other sources of religion. So the Brazilian people is a people that is more flexible than, I would say, some other people in Europe that are more, I would say, orthodox, if I may use this word. So in Brazil, it's very common that you may have a date, a national religious date, for instance, the date that we pray for São Jorge. São Jorge is, in the Roman Catholic Church, is a very important saint, including all over the world. But in Brazil, São Jorge is linked to one of the gods, if you may say so, or the good protectors of the African origin religion, Macumba, and this type of thing. So when you have the day of São Jorge, around the church of São Jorge, that is a Roman Catholic, you have thousands of people that are coming because also they recognize São Jorge as someone that has an influence in other type of religion. But this is not a contradiction. It's difficult for a foreigner to understand. But that's the way it is. We are people that are more open to different types of spirituality. And to come to your question, I think that the young people nowadays is feeling a little bit without guidance that would be appropriate to their own interest.
Since Lula has been elected, I remember when he was elected, everyone was very hopeful because of his background, because of the person he is. Has he really made a change in a society that is rife with poverty?
Well, I think there is no doubt about that. I think that it doesn't matter if you are in favor or against Lula, but you have to be fair with the numbers. And if you look at the numbers, you are going to see that in the last 4 or 5 years, first, the level of unemployed people has decreased. Second, the number of young people in school have increased. Third, we have, which is perhaps the most important social program, we have 11 million families, which means around 33 million people under the umbrella of a program that is called Program Against the Hunger, Against Hunger, that is very effective because this guarantees to a family where the family is unemployed or the head of the family is unemployed, guarantees, you know, a basket of food and money, but at the same time, it demands that the children, if there are children, that family should be at the school. So in a sense, you are not only protecting the family, but you are, in a way, preserving that the next generation would have more opportunities because they are going to follow the school.
What about Sao Paulo, which you know very well? It's one of the most populous areas in the world. The Pope's bound to touch on big issues there, like urbanization. I know there's a lot of migration from the rural areas into the city, which means problems with criminality. What's the government doing to tackle these problems?
Well, I think that also, not only in Sao Paulo, but also in Rio, the phenomenon of internal migration is important, was important. Let's not forget that Lula himself was a migrant. He was a man from the north that came to the south, to Sao Paulo, was someone that worked on a factory and now then later on became a leader and later on a politician, although he doesn't like the word, and nowadays is president. So he was a migrant. He knows very well the problem. That's the great difference between Lula and other people, because Lula doesn't speak historically. It's not a question of rhetorics. He knows the problem. He lived the problem. His mother was someone that was, in certain ways, had not the bread to put to their children, including to him. So he knows what he's talking about. And with all those programs, he has decreased, in fact, the level of migration from these people from the north to the south. Now, with the social programs I have been mentioning, many families are returning to their original cities because they see that they can have more opportunities over there than they have in the megalopolis, in the mega cities. But the problem also is not a question only of labor. The problem that we have of criminality, in fact, is a problem with many complexities. One of those complexes is the question of drug trafficking and the question of violence that is associated with the traffic. But I believe that this problem is now being considered in a more macroeconomic way by the government, the central government, means Lula, and the states, in particular the states of Rio, São Paulo, and Minas Gerais.
It was getting late. The ambassador had someone waiting for him in the next room, so I asked one last question. What legacy, I said, do you think this visit will leave the people and the Church of Brazil?
Well, you know, I think that although we have spoken about the diversity of religion in Brazil, you have to recognize that Brazil is the most important Roman Catholic country in the western side of the hemisphere. So a visit of the Pope is, of course, something that is very much expected. And this visit is not different. And I think that it is important. It will be the first time that Brazil will have a canonized saint. I think that will be important for the Church itself, because I think that the presence of the Pope will reinforce the links on the Roman Catholic Church. And I think that the presence of the Pope to get in touch with these people that is very, in general, it's very kind. We have no ethnic problems. We don't have religious infighting. So I think this is something that the Pope, that is a very clever man and a very profound man, would certainly take advantage of this experience to widespread a little bit of peace that we need in the world, I believe.
And while Brazil just recently, in the middle of April, celebrated its National Day of the Indian, a new wave of dam building in the Brazilian Amazon is threatening the lives of remote Indian tribes. Reading up on the website of Survival International, a non-governmental organization working for the defense of indigenous peoples' rights around the world, I discovered that Brazil is home to some 200 tribes who live scattered across the country. Between them, they speak a huge number of languages, and the tribes range enormously in size, with some numbering tens of thousands of people and others only a few dozen. I also read that in the 500 years since Europeans arrived in Brazil, the tribal peoples have experienced genocide, killings, and the loss of much of their land. Today, their land is still taken over for ranches or industrial projects, such as the dam building I mentioned, notwithstanding international recognition of the rights of indigenous peoples and widespread expert agreement regarding the precious role they play in preserving biodiversity and countering climate change. Survival International's campaigns coordinator, Fiona Watson, told me more about their dramatic predicament.
In a number of areas in the Amazon, on a number of different tributaries, there are a whole series of hydroelectric dams planned, and this is all part of the Brazilian government's desire for, they have a program actually that they launched about 100 days ago called the PAC, which is the Program of Accelerated Growth. And what they're doing is encouraging as much agriculture as possible, industry, and this is going to have very profound effects for the Amazon forest and its inhabitants, particularly the indigenous peoples. The reason that they want to build dams is to produce more energy to fuel industry and agriculture. But the indigenous peoples are totally opposed to the dams because they say that this is going to destroy their way of life. Many of the peoples living, for example, on the Xingu River and the Juruena River are predominantly fishing people, so they rely almost entirely on fish for their protein, for their food, for their diet. And of course, being indigenous communities, they get their water directly from the river. So it's extremely important that these rivers are kept flowing and are kept clean. And the hydroelectric dams are going to threaten their fishing. There's already a lot of silting and drying up of the headwaters of many of these rivers, particularly the Xingu River, where the agricultural frontier, particularly soya, is right now on the headwaters, and they're simply drying up. So having the dams is going to only make this problem worse.
Doesn't the Brazilian constitution protect the Amazon from this kind of interference?
Well, there are good environmental laws and indeed indigenous rights recognized in the constitution in Brazil. The big problem is how are these enforced and put into practice? And what you're seeing here really is this sort of clash of certain people, particularly the governor of Mato Grosso state, where many of the planned dams will be built. He is one of the world's biggest soya producers, and so he wants to develop at all costs, whereas the indigenous peoples are saying, no, we want sustainable development and development that takes into account not just sort of money and growth, but it respects people's culture and their rights. So this is becoming an increasingly entrenched battle. And the problem is that even though you have the laws, they're not really applied, or if they are applied, they're not applied in the right way. One of the things that is happening now is that the president of Brazil, President Lula, has announced that the Environment Agency is going to be split into two because he's complaining that they're taking too long to approve environmental and social impacts for large projects like the dams. But many people think that, you know, if the social and environmental impacts are not done correctly, this is going to be used by these powerful industrialists to do already. I mean, I've seen one of the social impacts assessments, and it's an absolute joke. I mean, it simply isn't a proper scientific assessment. But these sort of things might be approved rapidly now, and therefore, you know, people's environmental and social concerns really will not be addressed.
Now, I see in your report that a big dams project was in fact abandoned in 1989 after huge protests were staged. Do you think there's any possibility the same thing might happen again today?
I think it could well happen because already a number of indigenous peoples along the Xingu River, in fact in one area, the Paranatinga Dam, that's already partly being constructed, and it was stopped because of the protests by the Mehinaku people, and the Ikpeng people have also been protesting, and they've gone into the areas where the works are being carried out, and they've confiscated equipment, and I think they feel this is the only alternative they have to make their voice felt. They have to take peaceful but direct action. So I wouldn't be at all surprised that, you know, as time goes by, if the indigenous peoples feel that their concerns are not being properly addressed, and they certainly aren't at the moment, there may well be mass protests like we saw in 1989, where you may remember that there was a huge meeting organized by the Kayapo Indians, and all sorts of people, you know, famous personalities were there, and the Kayapo traveled abroad, and they went to protest in Washington at the World Bank, who were going to fund the dams at the time. And in fact, that was a very successful their protest, because all the international media were there, and the World Bank pulled out, said it wouldn't fund the dams, and the whole project was shelved.
Fiona, reading the information on your website, I discovered that before the arrival of Europeans, Brazil was home to at least 1,000 tribes. Today, there are only about 200 of these left. A few of them, I believe, are still uncontacted. Now, why is it important they be protected?
Well, I think it's absolutely crucial, because you're really talking about people who are living on the knife edge. They're very, very small, fragmented groups of people who have gone, historically fled from contact, because they know what contact in the past has meant. They've seen their other tribes or relatives simply either killed in violent conflict, or more commonly dying of diseases like the common cold or flu, which can be absolutely lethal to an uncontacted tribe. So they've sought refuge in the very, very headwaters of the Amazonian rivers. And they clearly do not want contact, because they've seen what it's done. And Brazil now has a policy, a good policy, which is not to contact these people unless it is absolutely essential for their survival, and protect their lands and leave them in peace and let them make contact in their own time as and when they want. It's really about giving them space to carry on living and a choice, if you like, respecting that choice. For example, Survival's working on a case of an uncontacted group, and they're simply known as the Rio Pardo Indians, because that's the name of the river they live on. And we know absolutely nothing about them. We don't know what language they speak. We really don't know how many there are, whether they're 20, 30, 40, or 50. But we know they're there. There's evidence of their houses, which they've abandoned in a hurry, which implies they're being forced to flee. And we know they're coming under violent attacks from loggers and land grabbers active in the area. So it's a very urgent situation that if their land is not recognized and it's, if it's not protected, these people will die. And you are talking about extinction, a whole people being wiped out. And I think, you know, we're all aware in this century how precious human life and diversity is. And everybody has the right to life and to live how they wish to. And just because these peoples are uncontacted doesn't mean they don't have the same rights as anybody else.
Yeah, that was what I was going to say, that apart from the rights they have to live their lives in self-determination, the diversity of their culture and their knowledge is a richness that is a richness to the rest of the world as well, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, I think there's a lot of evidence coming out now from places like the Amazon rainforest of the extraordinary sophisticated skills of these people, the knowledge of these people. And, you know, as we're talking, I mean, the world is facing the issue of climate change and global warming, etc. Studies have shown by U.S. and Brazilian scientists that in many places of the Amazon, the only areas now where you get continuous cover of tropical rainforest are indigenous territories. And in fact, they are now acting as a barrier to, say, fires, which are frequently started in the Amazon because of the burning, you know, burning of the forest to create cattle pasture or soya plantations or whatever. So in fact, you know, these people really have something to show us. And, of course, they're the people who really live ultimately self-sustainably. It was something that we're all talking about now.
Laudetur Jesus Christus.